Welcome to AI, Government and the Future, a podcast by Corner Alliance. We explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, government and the future. We work with government to create results. We ignite your agency's mission by helping you to design and implement high impact and innovative federal programs in AI, broadband, cybersecurity, public safety and more. Being a government ally is at the core of all we do.
Hey, welcome to AI, the Future in Government podcast. I'm Alan Pence. It's just going to be me today. It's a different kind of episode. Every once in a while, I like to step back and reflect on some of the big themes that we're learning about through our interviews on the show. And as a company, Corner Alliance, working with the federal government, Max, Mark, and I have been doing lots of interviews across government, private sector, academia, nonprofits, and learning quite a bit. So we started this journey maybe back last September, October, something like that. So there have probably been about four things that I'm really interested in now that I developed over just the last few weeks, or we've learned over the last few months through the interviews. The first is the regulatory framework surrounding AI. Of course, this is something that got a lot of play last year. Into this year, we had Biden's executive order late last year. We also had the EU AI law that passed in a modified form earlier this year. We've had multiple summits, one in the UK. We've had several here, congressional hearings, lots of activity around regulation. What I've noticed is, in general, most of the regulation kind of misses the mark. It's very GDPR-esque. I think the EU basically is built off of that framework. Focuses a lot on getting models registered and checked centrally. And even in the executive order from the administration, there was sort of voluntary calls for models to be registered in different places and then checked. And then as they're modified, disclosure about what those modifications were. So I think this is just not workable. I think it misunderstands the technology. There's no way that these models are going to stay static for that long. People like OpenAI or Google, they're making changes in their models all the time. And I think this idea that they're going to be registered and fixed in some way is really just misunderstands how AI is going to get used. The second piece of that that I think is really dangerous, actually, is that it doesn't take account for open source. Particularly the EU side, I feel like there's a lot of mistrust of open source, and originally in the bill, there was a lot of liability associated with what third parties would do with an open source model. And so the people creating the model would be liable for what third parties might do with it. This is just insanity. Like, we need open source models. We shouldn't be trying to lock ourselves into large proprietary companies, especially given the fact that they're probably only really three companies that are going to compete in this so far, and that being Microsoft with OpenAI together, Google with Gemini, and then I think Anthropic with Claude that's a kind of another new development that they've kind of reached parity and even surpassed OpenAI in some ways, in my opinion. So you really see those as the three companies going forward. I think we saw a lot of other companies kind of thrown in the towel. Inflection AI did sort of like a buyout with Microsoft and a strange deal to get around antitrust, but the whole team moved over to Microsoft. I think you just see a lot of these model companies just aren't going to make it. They don't have the resources to buy the GPUs to continue to play the game of getting faster and better than the big guys, right? This is a big resource investment, especially when you're on the edge, and very few are going to be able to keep up with Microsoft and Google. Anthropic seems like that third challenger that might. So we don't want to be locked into those three. So regulation that hurts the open source, the Llama models coming out of Meta, Mistral out of France, actually, that's just going to lock us into these big players. And as we saw with some of the releases from them, we do not want to be locked into their version of the world. We want to be able to play across a lot of models, use different models for different purposes. Some, and I think we've seen, for instance, I think ChatGPT is amazing at coding, whereas Claude is amazing at more creative writing, a lot better than ChatGPT. So you want to be able to use these models separately and use the best one for whatever that service is that you need at that time. So I really do think we need to take a step back and realize that regulating your way in AI is just vastly premature. It tends to lock in the large players who can get regulatory capture and influence the regulators the most, and shuts down innovation. And I think, you know, what we've realized through this process too, is that really even the definition of AI, and this was an issue I highlighted in the Biden's executive order, is very squishy, right? I mean, basically AI is math and software put together. So technically, some kind of pivot table you create in Excel could be considered AI, right? It's a decision-making tool using math and an algorithm. So really what we're talking about with AI is a difference in scale, not in type. And so I think even the definition of it is very cloudy, and we certainly do not want to regulate the entire tech sector. It is the key to future productivity. And I'd also say just in the AI landscape, we are far too early in the process of understanding what AI really even is and what the capabilities are to be making large, you know, regulatory changes. I just think that's foolish, and those pursuing it should know better. But the good news, I think, is that I think there's been some recognition of that. You hear less urgency around immediate laws. I mean, the EU did move forward. They modified the bill to some extent, and it didn't hurt that France now has a national champion in Mistral. So all of a sudden, they like AI and don't think it's evil and threatening the way it was when it was just American companies. So, hey, I'll take it where I can get it, even if the French are doing it for completely mercenary reasons. I'll take it. So I do think we've seen a reduction in the urgency around regulation. Certainly an area we need to monitor. There will be regulations down the road that need to be made. And I think we've also realized that the problem with AI is not AI, it's what people do with it. And so if you commit a crime with AI, it's still a crime. You do something with it that's against an existing regulation, it's still a violation of the regulation. So what we should really be doing is regulating the behavior of the people using the AI and not focusing on the companies to try to prevent them from creating capabilities, because capabilities are neutral and they can be used for good and evil. And so we can't regulate that way. Almost any technology you can name has a similar issue. And we tend not to regulate the technology, we tend to regulate the use, and we should stick with that framework. So that's where I've seen regulation go. I think it's gone from distressing and something I was really worried about to something I'm probably a little bit less worried about. If you want more on that, there's a really great Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz, the principal partners at Andreessen Horowitz, which is one of the maybe the largest venture capital firm in America or in the world right now. Maybe not, but close. You know, they've been really pro keeping hands off on the regulatory side and spending in their last podcast, they did about an hour and a half on it and talked a lot about their efforts in DC, coming to educate people, fighting off the big guys, Microsoft, OpenAI, Google, who are trying to get regulatory capture to write the regulations to lock their own advantages in. But I think they've been great voices and they've been helpful. So if you want more of that, go check out their A16Z is, I think, their podcast. They have the Mark and Ben show and did excellent overview of the regulatory framework and where they've been active. Second thing, they talked a little bit about that. Also, All In Podcast, I thought, did some good stuff on this last week. That's a podcast of other VCs in Silicon Valley, talking about the move that Microsoft recently made, buying a data facility right by a nuclear plant with getting a power supply from nuclear plant. So kind of brought up in CEO NVIDIA, which makes the GPU chips that power most AI, recently made this point as well, that really up till now, the limiting factor on AI has been GPUs. So basically compute and how many GPUs you can put together, how many you can get, their capacity constrained with manufacturing capacity in these. And the more you can put together, the more you can train your models and build your models and run your models, right? So really that's been the limiting factor is how many GPU chips are out there and running them in a data center. So what people are starting to see is maybe the future limiting factor will not in fact be the GPU, but it might be the energy needed to power the GPU. And this is what we see in the Microsoft move. So some excellent discussion. It's actually another podcast. Sorry, I think multiple podcasts here, but again, two venture capitalists I think are fantastic. Bill Gurley, retired from Benchmark, and Brad Gerstner do, like it's the B to G show, something like that. They did a great piece on this energy, the impact of this energy need. So I think we're going to see, I think they were quoting something like 20% of energy consumption is going to go to AI in the United States. That's a pretty incredible stat when you think about it. And I think what we're seeing is that our grid and our current energy strategy isn't really equipped to power AI. We've essentially had static electricity creation in the United States, or I think it's gone up basically with inflation. That's largely because we've gotten so much more energy efficient. Our economy is much less energy intensive than it was 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So we haven't needed that demand. But with AI coming, we are definitely going to need it. And our current trajectory of focusing on green tech, particularly solar and wind, is not going to get the job done. It's too hard to build. The solar farms we need to build are too big. Can't happen. It won't power AI in the future. It'll help, but it won't be the answer. What we really need is nuclear, probably, for the green side, because it has no carbon emissions. So, you know, you see Microsoft making this move. Hey, we're gonna buy something with a private nuclear plant attached, and that'll give us this energy advantage. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. But I also think we need policy change in the United States. There's definitely been a movement toward nuclear, but we need to have regulatory relief on building nuclear. The reason it's so expensive and time consuming is just straight out regulation. So we're going to need some relief there. But as Brad and Bill point out, even with regulatory relief and a lot of funding, it's going to take us 10 plus years to build nuclear out. So we should certainly do that and plan. You know, we need a better, our AI strategy really needs to be integrated across a lot of parts of the economy, including supply chains, you know, like we see with the CHIPS Act, and now we're seeing energy, also with education and training of workers and people to help with AI, the power. But I mean, their conclusion is essentially, we don't have, you know, AI demand is here. It's growing exponentially right now. We don't have 10 years to wait. We should certainly get the nuclear in 10 years that we need. But in the meantime, natural gas is going to be the only way to do this. And we as a country have an advantage here, right? Natural gas arguably burns cleaner than most other energy forms that aren't renewable or nuclear. And we produce quite a bit of it. And it's not now currently an international market because Ellen, we do have liquid natural gas that we ship, but it's only a small portion of what's produced and requires a lot of investment to create terminals to make the LNG, and shipping is a limitation. So we don't price LNG the way we do globally, like oil. So the United States doesn't price its own oil. It's based on marginal demand from every country and supplier, right? But LNG is different. So we're paying sometimes up to a quarter or a third of what the rest of the world is paying for natural gas. Certainly, Europe's having trouble with that, with Russian gas going off because of the Ukraine invasion. And we have this advantage where we're paying a quarter to a third of the price where we can use natural gas to power our AI efforts. So I think it could be a huge advantage. You see China building out. I mean, they're building coal, nuclear, solar, wind. They're building everything. So it's not, and again, it's not that I don't think we shouldn't build solar and wind. They can be supplements. They're just not going to be big enough and powerful enough to take care of demand increasing 10, 20, 30, 40% a year versus 1 or 2 or 3%. So we're going to need natural gas, wind, solar, and then eventually nuclear. So this is not investment advice, but I think the natural gas prices are probably going to go up as AI demand goes up. And I think you're going to see a lot of pressure to increase the capacity of the electric grids in order to power AI. It is the future. It's how we're going to drive productivity. It's going to determine how wealthy, how long we live, how wealthy we are. So certainly burning some more natural gas to get there is well worth it. So that's the second theme I think I've seen is that is really new. Just in the last couple of months, I've really heard about the energy demand potentially being the key driver and main limiter of progress on AI. The other theme, which I've highlighted before, but I've seen even more, is the change in the form factor of AI. So right now, a lot of us are using, I mean, we do consume AI and things like Word Complete on Gmail and built into different pieces of software, but it's really minor, small features, doesn't really dominate, change the experience. I think what we're going to see in the next few months is particularly, I think Apple's working on this to get AI tuned to the chips that they have and working on the phone and the iPad and eventually the Apple Watch and all that kind of stuff. So I think what you're going to see is probably less power intensive, you know, they're going to have to be less capable models right now. They're not going to be able to use the same level that you can on a desktop. But I think you're going to see these AI models shrink a little bit. They're still going to be very capable. And then as we advance the top models, the lower models can get more and more efficient. And then I think we'll see increasing numbers of focused models. So not a model that does coding, writes text, and does images. Potentially AIs that are more focused that just do maybe financial analysis for a business, or they just do writing, or they just do an image, or they just do it in this way so that it works much better and more effectively on a phone. And I think that's going to then get built into applications so that the front will not be this text box with put in your prompt. It'll be voice, you know, talking to your phone. Again, I think Apple needs some work on Siri to make this happen. And hopefully that's where they're focusing. But Google Assistant and others will be there. And I think we'll see AI seep into every part of the mobile experience. And the form factor will be different. So everyone will be using it. They just won't be using it the way that the people on the cutting edge right now are going to a site. Certainly things like Midjourney, where you're going to a Discord server. I mean, that is not going to be happening going forward. So I think we're going to see this huge change in the UI and form factor of AI over the next year. It's going to be everywhere and it's going to be everything, right? So I think that's the third theme I would definitely highlight that I'm seeing. And then the last theme is really more or less on the government side, but more on the business side. I really wonder, and again, this has been discussed on multiple of the podcasts I've mentioned and reading I've done, is who's going to make money out of this stuff? So certainly NVIDIA is making money, you know, they're producing and selling the chips. But when you start looking at it, the big guys making these huge models, the price that they're right now, they're getting about $20 a month. And, you know, they're trying to put it, Microsoft's trying to put in Copilot, that's another $20. But their capabilities are all sort of converging on the same thing. And they seem to be getting increasingly commodified. So I could really, and then I think open source will really keep up with it. And I think we'll get to a point where the models for most, for say 95% of the activities, open source will be as good as you need. And there'll be that, you know, 5-10% where the most advanced models will do so much better. But if you can, you know, you can only make an image so good, a text so good. And if open source really becomes, really can get you to that 99% solution at way less the cost, you're going to go for it, right? And we're already seeing some companies come out that are parsing out what people are asking for in models and sending the stuff that's easier to do to cheaper models so you don't have to pay the higher prices of like OpenAI's top model. So I really think we're going to see this continue where it's going to be questionable whether the big guys are going to make that much money off of this. And I'm really wondering where the profits are. They're clearly at NVIDIA right now, but where are they in the future? I think that's a big question mark. Is it going to be in more focused apps where people are using their own data, proprietary data, leveraging the models? It's really hard to say. And I guess you would say that if there is no profit, and then eventually the leaders, OpenAI, Google, might stop investing in it, right? But it seems to me like the open source movement is large enough and has gained enough momentum now that that might not matter. It might slow the development of it, but I don't think it's going to stop it. The open source movement is now, with Meta releasing and backing up Llama, I think it's really taken off. You have Mistral, you have others out there building these things. And it could be that OpenAI and Microsoft and Google just launched the thing that's going to destroy them by commodifying everything they do and running it all on open source. So that's certainly jury's out. I don't know. It's not a prediction yet. But I think that's the other theme I'm really watching. It's like, who is going to make money out of this? And as a result, that will help dictate where the investment goes. So hope you enjoyed it. Sorry to have to listen to me droning on for 20 plus minutes. But we'll be back with some more guests over the next couple of weeks. And stay well. And I'll check in again in a couple of months. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
AI, Government and the Future is brought to you by Corner Alliance. To find out more about Corner Alliance and how we work with government to create results, visit our website at corneralliance.com and then make sure to search for AI Government Future in Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Corner Alliance, thanks for listening.